ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Today morning we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 13. Chapter is entitled Brahma Stealing the Boys and Calves. Texts 29 and 30. Tato vidura charato gavo vatsanupavrajam govardhanadri shirasi charantyodadrushustranam. Thereafter, while pasturing atop Govardhan Hill, the cows looked down to find some green grass and saw their calves pasturing near Vrindavan, not very far away. Text 30. Drishtva tatat sneha vasho smritatma sa govrajotyatma padurga marga Dvipad kukud griva udasya puchho gadung kritaira srupaya javena. When the cows saw their own calves from the top of Govardhan Hill, they forgot themselves and their caretakers because of increased affection. And although the path was very rough, they ran toward their calves with great anxiety, each running as if with one pair of legs, their milk bags full and flowing with milk, their heads and tails raised, and their humps moving with their necks. They ran forcefully until they reached their calves to feed them. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Generally, the calves and cows are pastured separately. The elderly men take care of the cows and the small children see to the calves. This time, however, the cows immediately forgot their position as soon as they saw the calves below Govardhan Hill, and they ran with great force, their tails erect and their front and hind legs joined, until they reached their calves. Hare Krishna. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to speak on the 10th canto. Completely undeserving. But by the mercy of the devotees, I'm in this position. So, I require the blessings of all the Vaishnavas to be able to do some service which inspires you on your path of devotional service. So, generally, we see that a life in Krishna consciousness is the ability to be able to tolerate different electrifying shocks that come in our life. The more we are able to see Krishna's hand or Krishna's will behind all the incidents that happen in our life, the better is our ability to tolerate all these shocks. And we are seeing how Brahmaji is going through such an episode in his life. He is being, you know, getting a shock treatment. Or I was just thinking it is almost like a root canal treatment, you know. Because in a root canal, what the dentist does is he goes to the, you know, root of this thing and tries to remove the cavity. So similarly, Krishna sees that there is a kind of a cavity in the consciousness of Brahmaji. And then he is doing this treatment to just go right to his false ego and remove whatever unnecessary things are there. So generally, it is quite embarrassing to be discussing the faults of our seniors. You know, like sometimes we see that externally, like our seniors or, you know, somebody who's come to devotional service much before us, you know, they probably it might look like some, you know, mistakes are being performed. And they are getting, you know, as they say in ISKCON slang, they are getting the sauce from their seniors. So sometimes if you happen to be in the presence when this exchange is taking place, it can be real embarrassing, because the person who's given you knowledge and, you know, who's taught you, has brought you up in Krishna consciousness, he is being, you know, corrected by his senior. So this is what is happening here right now, actually. Brahmaji, he is the founder acharya of a sampradaya. All the knowledge that we have, and, you know, this knowledge is so special, we should never take this knowledge for granted. That tells us about our real position. What is our constitutional position? Like Gopinathachandra Prabhu was telling, what is the real code of our life? To be the servant of the servant of the servant. This knowledge is so rare and so special, and it's actually coming from Brahmaji. So it is very embarrassing to be discussing, kind of embarrassing to be discussing these things, how Brahmaji was corrected by the Supreme Lord. But here we see that, you know, in the Bhagavatam classes, you know, for the past so many weeks, we are discussing and we are analyzing and we are going deeper and, you know, discussing the faults of Brahmaji. So how is this? In fact, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that you just do two things and I will take you back home, back to Godhead. He said, just simply chant Hare Krishna and never criticize anybody. Okay, what to speak about devotees, what to speak about criticizing a guru, what to speak about criticizing the founder acharya of a parampara. Okay, just don't, you know, criticize anybody and chant Hare Krishna, I'll take you back. But here, like, so, you know, just we, as we said just now, we've been discussing this for so long. And why is that? Why is this authorized? Because this is authorized because by describing this incident, it pleases Lord Brahma, because this shows how the master of Lord Brahma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the most powerful and the best supermost controller, the supreme controller. So Brahma is excited, and whenever he gets an opportunity to glorify the Lord, even if it is at his own expense, he is thrilled. And because describing this pleases Brahma, our founder acharya, because as we sing every day in the morning, Yasya Prasada Bhagavat Prasado, when we are able to please the spiritual master, if we are able to please Brahmaji, if we are able to please us, you know, all the Vaishnavas, then automatically the Lord is pleased. Therefore, we try to go deeper and deeper into this incident, not with a view of criticizing Lord Brahmaji or the Vaishnavas, but to prove that how the Lord so sweetly and magnificently proves that he is a supreme controller. Of course, even though the spiritual master's chastisement is definitely very tough on the ego, and generally devotees are, you know, if somebody is on the receiving end, all the other devotees go and try to pacify the devotee, saying that, hey, it's a very special mercy that you have received, and try to pacify him. But when that mercy in the form of chastisement is being received, it's very, very tough on the ego. But we have seen how this particular kind of mercy from the spiritual master is remembered by the disciple more than any of the other sweet exchanges, because that creates kind of a more deeper impact on the consciousness. Like how, you know, Shruti Kirti, one of the, like, so many examples we have of Prabhupada, you know, giving this kind of tough mercy to his devotees. Like, I remember Shruti Kirti Prabhu was narrating to us once how Prabhupada was giving a talk, and they were like, you know, the temple devotees were there, on the guests were there, and Shruti Kirti Prabhu was next to him and, you know, doing a chamar. And there were many flies. I don't remember. Maybe it was Vrindavan. I don't know where it was. But there were some kind of flies and all that. And Prabhupada was, you know, again and again, he was looking at Shruti Kirti Prabhu because he was getting disturbed by the flies. And one of the thing you do the chamar is so that to drive away the flies. So when Shruti Kirti, that service was not being performed properly, so Prabhupada just looked at Shruti Kirti Prabhu and said that, like, don't you know how to do this properly? Something, I'm paraphrasing. So then Shrutakirti Prabhu went, you know, very this thing. So another, he called another devotee. So this devotee was like very big and huge, and he just grabbed the chamar from Shrutakirti Prabhu. Very tough guy. And Shrutakirti Prabhu, obviously, like it's happening in front of guests and all the devotees. So he just sulked and just went and sat. And then he saw this big, big devotee, six foot plus devotee, just going, ooh, 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 you know, like very, very vigorously he was fanning Prabhupada. And Shrutakirti Prabhu was saying, my God, what a way to, you know, fan. I think like, because Prabhupada is in a chastising mood, he is going to chastise this devotee even more. But then Prabhupada looked at this devotee and smiled and said, yes, very good boy, very good boy. So Shrutakirti Prabhu felt even more, you know, small. So when we hear of these incidents, we should not feel that the spiritual master's anger is a cause of being entangled in the material modes. Just like Bhagavad Gita, third chapter, it said, Kamayesha Krodayesha Rajoguna Samudbhava, that this calm, this lust and anger is a product of being entangled in the three modes. Actually, the spiritual master's anger is beyond the three modes, and it is for the sole purpose of drawing the disciple closer to the lotus feet of Krishna. Just like in Boston once in the 70s, Satsurup Maharaj narrates this story, how there was a tree which was growing very dangerously close to the temple, and the devotees thought that it would be a wise thing to cut down the tree. And finally they cut down the tree, and Prabhupada was very upset, very upset. And when, because I think Prabhupada had said, instructed, no matter what happens, this tree should not be cut down. But still the devotees thought, you know, the deity should be protected, the devotee should be protected, so let me cut down the tree. And when Prabhupada came back for the next visit, the first thing he said, even though Prabhupada has so many centers, he remembered that tree. And then he said, what happened to the tree? And the devotees explained, we cut it down. And Prabhupada was like very, very heavy. This is your, you know, neophyte mentality, that whatever you don't need, you just cut it. It's a living entity, can't you understand? And so many things he said, and the devotees were really, really terrified, thinking that they had really offended the spiritual master by disobeying his instructions. But later on, Satsuru Maharaj narrates that when he went fearfully to Prabhupada's room, when Prabhupada was sitting in his room, he saw that Prabhupada was peacefully sitting and humming the morning Bhagavatam verse on which he had given a class in the temple hall. Showing that sometimes, like, you know, we can judge for ourselves. If when we are angry, when something is really wrong, then that mood just carries onto all other activities that we do. We cannot control it. We cannot say that, okay, let me stop being angry and let me be absorbed in the other activities of Krishna consciousness. It just carries over to all other activities. But here, Satsuru Maharaj was writing his realization, how he saw, when he saw that Prabhupada humming this Bhagavatam verse, he realized that that anger was completely on the transcendental level and purely for the benefit of the disciple. And actually, if you see this kind of chastisement by the spiritual master, it is a big austerity for the spiritual master, actually. Because he does not really love to kind of bring down somebody, but sometimes he knows that the foolish disciple will understand by no other way than by this heavy, by the heavy words that he uses or by the heavy action he takes in the form of chastisement. Like, for example, our Gaur Mohan De, the father of our very dear Srila Prabhupada, whenever he would have to correct Abhay Charan, little Abhay Charan or Prabhupada, he would first apologize to him, saying that, I'm very sorry I have to do this, but you see, you are my son, so I have to correct you. And then he would do it. So, you know, nobody likes to, the thing is, if we are enjoying chastising anybody and we are enjoying putting down somebody, then we probably don't deserve to be in that position. So we have to introspect. Like sometimes we have to use as being in positions of authority, speaking very tough. But if you are enjoying doing that again and again, then there is something seriously wrong in our consciousness. In fact, Srila Prabhupada many times declared that his disciples were the representatives of his Guru Maharaj. So if he's feeling like that, if he's feeling that, you know, the people who am who have joined me are the representatives of my spiritual master, my Gurudev, and are coming to assist me in my Gurudev's mission, then how is it possible for one to chastise the spiritual master's representative? We would never do that. If somebody, you know, will we ever dare to even correct the spiritual master's godbrother or someone else connected to the spiritual master? No way. So how is it that Prabhupada is able to do it? Because that's the mood. That internally he is just doing it only for the benefit of that particular disciple concerned and for the benefit of all the others. In fact, Prabhupada was actually declared this. This is not a speculation from my part. In his last days, we are reading this in the Leelamrita right now during the Prasadam time, that how Prabhupada, in his last days, when he is on the, you know, deathbed, sickbed, he again and again is telling all the devotees that please forgive him for being rough and for being, you know, such a hard taskmaster. But then he clarified that he was doing it only because he loved his disciples so much. On the other hand, the disciple should be very happy when the senior is correcting him or chastising him. This is a very tough thing. But then we have to inculcate this kind of mood in our consciousness. For example, we see in, Srila Prabhupada's own life. Okay, there are so many aspects to Srila Prabhupada's life. But if we just concentrate on this one aspect about how he was expert in smashing all the other philosophies. He was like a, you know, world champion debater. There is never any incident you find because in Prabhupada, almost all the conversations he had with outsiders is recorded, and you never find Prabhupada ever losing any kind of debate with anybody. You know, in fact, many, many powerful scientists, Nobel Prize laureates, whom the world is hearing attentively and lapping up every word, they would become weak in the knees whenever they would face Prabhupada. So-called religionists would also suddenly find that they don't have any answers for the cutting points, cutting remarks that Prabhupada is making. In fact, I remember one incident, I don't remember the year, Prabhupada is having a conversation with these Mensa people. Mensa is basically an organization of people who have exceptionally high intelligence quotient. I think, you know, this IQ, you have a test and then you give a test and you get the score. So they made an organization. I think it is, if you have a IQ of about 135 or 140, you are eligible to join this Mensa. So once these representatives of Mensa and I think the president or someone, some people senior, you can imagine how intellectually capable they are. They came to meet Srila Prabhupada and they had a discussion about, you know, who is God and what is God, what is real science of God. And Prabhupada was just taking them left, right, center. And they were so impressed, like Prabhupada is about, you know, they smashed all their arguments. He's about to give them the real knockout punch. And, verbally, not obviously, not physically. And suddenly that Mensa person says, okay, Swamiji, you know, we didn't realize you're so brilliant. Okay, we have a proposal that we would like to make you an honorary member of our organization, Mensa. That you don't have to write any exam or anything like that. You can directly join our organization. So Prabhupada said, I have a proposal. Why don't you join our organization? Okay, like if you're really intelligent, if you have real IQ, then you will just sit and chant Hare Krishna with us. We will provide your food, we will provide your shelter, don't worry. So the point is that this is the kind of impression that Prabhupada is making on the intellectuals all over the world, you know, undefeatable. And we see that Prabhupada, this Srila Prabhupada, who was never defeated by anybody, was so thrilled to declare happily that my Guru Maharaj defeated me. This incident is, you know, happened in 1922 when Srila Prabhupada, then Abhay Charan, was a young man of 26 years. He met his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, on the terrace of the Ultradanga branch of the Gaudiya Math. And Prabhupada was given the first instruction by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati that you should go and preach in the Western world. So, first, you know, it was like a shock because it's the first ever time he's meeting Bhakti Siddhanta, and Bhakti Siddhanta gave him such a specific instruction. preach in the English language to all the Western speaking world. So then Prabhupada, because he was following Gandhi at that time, as was the case with almost, you know, the general mass of youth in India at that time, he said that who's going to listen to your message? First, let's become free from the British rule. This is 1922, India was under British rule. And once we become free, then we can think about giving your message of Lord Chaitanya to others. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was very heavy. In fact, if you, for us, when we read this in the Leelamrita or when we hear it, it's very natural. Oh, Bhaktisiddhanta said that don't wait for it now. I mean, this thing cannot wait for the leadership to change, because it doesn't matter. This is beyond that. And this is the necessity of the soul. So this is an emergency. But at that time, this was such a revolutionary statement, because the whole country is on fire. Thinking that, and the whole country thought that if we are able to, all the problems in our life is because of this British Raj. And once the British Raj is taken out of power, then our life will improve. At that time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said this, and when he said it with such conviction, that it just entered the heart. And for 40 years, we see how Prabhupada just kept it in the heart, and then, as we say, rest is history. So even though Prabhupada was able to defeat so many people, he was happily accepting defeat at the hands of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Similarly, we see in the first canto how Vyasadev is getting chastised by Narad Muni. In fact, he was so powerful, Vyasadev, he was seeing that there were so many anomalies in Kali Yuga, how people were getting degraded and disturbed, and they are not able to concentrate on their spiritual activities. So he very compassionately thought that he should do something for them. So he divided the Vedas into four parts, and then we see this all there in the first canto, and then how he entrusted each branch of the Vedas to different acharyas to propagate this knowledge. And then finally, and then he wrote the Upanishads and the Vedanta Sutras. And also to make it even more simpler, you know, coming down to the grassroots level, he also wrote the Mahabharata for the less intelligent strata of society. But still, internally, he was not feeling satisfied. And he began to contemplate. So at that time, we see in the first canto how Narad Muni enters in chapter 4. And because you can imagine, like, there has never been such a prolific author as Srila Vyasadeva. All kinds of technology, philosophy, theology, everything that is known to humans today, and all knowledge which will be known to him perhaps in the future, everything is already there in the Vedas. And it has been penned by Srila Vyasadeva. And still, in spite of having all this knowledge, he is not happy. And Narad Muni comes there, he doesn't beat around the bush. He is directly to the point and says, "My dear Prabhu, you have missed the point. By writing all this, you expected that automatically the people of this age, Kali Yuga, will be able to grasp that all this is not so important as developing the real goal of life. That is, developing love for Krishna. So people have missed the point, and because you have not glorified the Lord very directly, that is why you are not feeling satisfied. So please write such a literature that simply by hearing that direct glorification of the Lord, all the attached people of this world are also able to get the opportunity to be elevated." So Vyasadeva, he could have taken it in two ways. Either he could have said, "What are you talking about? I have written so many things." And one statement Narad Muni makes is, "Whatever you've written, you know, the lakhs and lakhs, perhaps crores of verses that you've written, it's only a place for the crows. And where do the crows stay? It's like a place, you know, where garbage is there, that's where the crows stay." So in other words, he's saying that, "Vyasadevji, whatever you have written is completely garbage. You better write something which will be beneficial for the spiritual elevation of the mass of people." So Vyasadeva, instead of getting disturbed, he takes this instruction to heart, and that's how we got the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is about chastisement, And we would also like to, in the few minutes that we have, also speak about another aspect that this verse brings about, is this power of attraction, actually. How, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Bhumirapo Nalovayu, Kham Mano Buddhirevacha, Ahankara Diyamme. There are eight separated material energies. And above this energy is the soul. This comes in the seventh chapter. Krishna says, Apareyam Itastvanyam, Prakritim Vidhime Param, Jiva Bhuta Mahabhaho, Yayedam, Dharete Jagat. Beyond this eight inferior energies, material energies, there is a superior energy. So when the superior energy or the living force tries to exploit the inferior energy, that is when the soul does not feel the satisfaction. Because the soul is a marginal energy, it can be influenced by either the superior nature or the inferior nature. When it tries to associate itself with the inferior nature and gets entangled with the inferior nature, it does not feel any satisfaction. Because the main thing is, by the nature of this inferior quality, this inferior nature cannot reciprocate with the marginal energy. Only the superior energy is able to reciprocate. And if the soul has to feel full satisfaction, then the soul should be fully engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to feel full reciprocation. Just like it is mentioned in the second chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, Vadanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. So this verse talks about how the realization of the absolute takes place in three stages: Brahman realization, Paramatma realization, and finally the Bhagavan. So one way to analyze it is that this transcendental reality is realized in increasing order of bliss. Brahman gives you a certain kind of bliss, Paramatma is more, and Bhagavan is the ultimate. Which, if looked at from another angle, we can say that unless one comes to the personal form, unless one deals with the personality, one cannot really experience the fullest bliss. So if we draw parallels to this, similarly, when we come to a spiritual institution, there is only a certain limit to where we can be impressed with the ambience that is provided, to the facilities that is provided, to the prasadam that is there, the kirtan, the philosophy, etc. But what will really, after some time, of course, it goes a long way in attracting the hearts and minds of the newcomers. But if we want to sustain this attraction, then the people who come to the spiritual institution, they have to have personal dealings with people who are following such a spiritual path. What will really impress the visitors is the quality of interaction they have with the personalities within the institution. Like, we can see, for example, like, we might be given such a wonderful feast, or we can tell them nice points from a class, deeply analyzing things, going deeper and deeper, and we can give them nice kirtan CDs. But if by chance they have a difficult interaction with even a single devotee, which really affects their heart, then no matter what other things we provide, they will never get impressed. In fact, they will remember that negative experience that they had while interacting with a devotee and forget all the other, you know, paraphernalia which is there in the spiritual institution. So it is very, very necessary that as part of a spiritual institution, we are able to present to the visitors, present to the newcomers of contemporaries who have really taken the teachings to heart. Because when they first come to Krishna consciousness, when they first come to the spiritual institution, the natural and the way we get them closer to Krishna is through Srila Prabhupada, and which is good. We explain to them, we bring them to Srila Prabhupada and tell them that, you know, the glories of Srila Prabhupada, how at the age of 70 he went through so much austerities to give this message, to spread this message all over the world, and read the books and we tell them about Srila Prabhupada's character. And so that really gives them the initial push, the initial attraction that this is something that, you know, someone whose footsteps we can follow. But after some time, people might ask us that, okay, you are saying this, but this is one Srila Prabhupada, you know, in your ISKCON. Where are the others in your movement, in your institution, who have actually imbibed the teachings of this founder Acharya? Because unless and until we are able to give them that experience, that personal interaction with the followers of Srila Prabhupada, who have really taken the teachings of Prabhupada deeply into their heart, people will just feel that these people are very superficial. They are still living in the 70s and the 80s. They are not really able to practically apply the philosophy. So, see, and we have to understand that how Prabhupada also attracted devotees to ISKCON. At that time, Prabhupada did not, so this is, I'm talking about the 60s, early 60s, 1966, when he was just creating the movement. People were not so much attracted to ISKCON or the other kind of facilities and all available. People were simply attracted to this person. Who is this man? Just like how devotees narrate to us that they were able to sense, they were not, see, how many things, Prabhupada was an old man, and these people had that motto we hear many times that never trust anybody above 30. Plus, Prabhupada had no money, not that they were attracted to Prabhupada because of the money. And surprisingly, even Prabhupada's, like sometimes as we Indians, sometimes they play the lecture on Mondays, we find it difficult to understand Prabhupada's accent. So they were not able to understand Prabhupada the way Prabhupada was speaking also. But yet they were able to sense that this person has not come to cheat us. They were thoroughly very, very attracted to Prabhupada's personality. So when Prabhupada said suddenly one day that, okay, so we are going to form the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, they were all a little taken aback. International Society? You know, we are such a small group, that too on the Lower East Side. They call it like the Dharavi of New York. And Prabhupada wants to start an international society. Okay, but this man, this person, I love this person, so whatever he says, I will do it. So Prabhupada told a few of them, okay, become the trustees, you sign here. Okay, this man is saying, let me sign. So the point we are trying to emphasize here is that Prabhupada was able to get the devotees attracted to his personality. And because he was attracted to his, these devotees were attracted to his personality, he was able to, the institution came later. The person came first and the institution came later. So it is not simply, if we hear this, we might feel that, okay, so preaching means it's just charisma. Okay, if a charismatic preacher will be able to attract many people to his personality, and that's the way to preach. But actually, Prabhupada's preaching was not merely a function of charisma. It is more because of Prabhupada's genuine love and concern for the soul. And one way that we can, you know, show that this was true is that till the time Srila Prabhupada was personally present on the planet, there were many, many disciples and many, many people were enthusiastically trying to practice spiritual life. But after Prabhupada's departure on November 14, 1977, we find that most of the disciples had difficulties and they had to leave the institution. So as long as their attraction was, you know, on a physical way to the personality of Prabhupada, they were able to maintain their spiritual life. But when they were not able to have that kind of a physical association or physical association with the personality of Prabhupada, they were not able to continue to practice their spiritual life. So we see that how it is like a very dynamic kind of an exchange, because people generally, the general mass of people, they don't really care about that institution. They get attracted to the personality. What is the kind of character and what is the kind of personality who's giving me spiritual life? And when they get attracted to the personality, they will automatically join the institution. But on the other side, the attractive and empowered personalities never give importance to their own self. They never give, you know, importance to their own personality. They give importance to the teachings that is being offered by the institution. Just like, for example, you know, in my own life, we were going so many times to Radha Rasbihari Mandir. We used to stay very close to Radha Rasbihari. before, and then when we were not really associating with the devotees, and at that time we were not really sure. We knew about the Hare Krishna movement and we knew about ISKCON, but it was only after, say, you know, 20 years of staying in that area, after we really started associating with the devotees intimately, that we heard about Prabhupada, the person, the personality who made the institution. So Prabhupada was so expert that even though people were getting attracted to his personality, he ensured that when he makes the institution, that the he does not overshadow the institution. So that's like a two-way, you know, handling it, dynamic. It's very dynamic. So why are we discussing this? So that we know that one of the ways of getting people attracted to spiritual life is by introducing them to those contemporaries, so who have genuine, uninterrupted and unmotivated taste in spiritual life. So when people get attracted to such a personality, so automatically they will be following the values that the person stands for. So in other words, sometimes in some parts of the world, it may not be such a good idea for certain empowered personalities to highlight their connection with the institution. So when we hear something like that, this kind of a preaching strategy, which is, you know, somewhat different, wherein a person does not highlight the connection to the institution, this can be a little disturbing. Why is he you know, preaching in such a way? So we see as an example how we saw how Prabhupada attracted people to his personality, and also Jayanand Prabhu, how he was so popular with the grocers around San Francisco area, who were very tough people. He would go there and ask them for donations of different groceries and different items, and he would make such a close relationship with all these people that some of them used to comment, "Oh, Jayanand is with ISKCON? Oh, is with Swami Prabhupada? Okay. If Jayanand is with this institution, that means it's all right." That means when people were able to get attracted to the personality, they were automatically able to accept the teachings of the institution. So there are some places where, you know, we may not be able to preach in such a direct and, you know, gung-ho manner, as they say, and openly declaring that we are from, you know, this represent this great institution. In fact, we are so grateful that for Prabhupada for making this institution, because if it were not for this institution, then perhaps none of us would ever dream of ever receiving spiritual life. So ISKCON for us is all in all. But unfortunately, because of certain mistakes that have happened in the past, you know, in different parts of the world, it may not be really possible for devotees to just go in and say directly that, okay, we are members of ISKCON. Because what has happened is, because of the behavior of inexperienced devotees and because of past history and things, you know, we don't want to get into that. This is Srimad Bhagavatam class. People have lost, the general mass of people have lost trust and faith in ISKCON as an institution. So if we really want to give such people who are not willing to trust ISKCON, we have to go in, empowered personalities have to go in and allow these people to connect to such empowered personalities on an individual basis rather than through an institution. And gradually, by developing this connection, they get attracted to the institution and they start following the principles. So when the general public places their trust in such an empowered person, he can then drag them to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. So the danger here is, we might think that, okay, if that is the goal of, you know, if that is a way to preach, then let me, you know, I am also empowered, I know so many shlokas, and I have been practicing my spiritual life so nicely. So maybe, you know, it's being revealed to me that I am that empowered personality. So let me attract people to me, and by getting attracted to me, I will take them towards Prabhupada. So that might be a little dangerous kind of a strategy, because if you really want to know whether we are an empowered personality or not, it is not so difficult. We just have to sit and introspect, and we have to see that how much are we free from sex desire. Simple. Okay, like, you know, keep, like, we used to have one saying in MBA, like, keep it simple. So simple strategy is, we don't have to speculate as to how much advanced or how, you know, less advanced we are. Just this is the only criteria we can just look at. How free are we from gross and subtle desire? Automatically, we will get to know the answer that, bhai, I am not that empowered personality. It is someone else. But having said that, this does not mean that because, you know, I am not free from sex desire, or we may not be free from sex desire, such people do not exist. If we just observe carefully and if we are sincere enough, we will see that every generation of devotees has some people, some few people perhaps, who are head and shoulders above the rest of the generation. You know, the way their realizations are there, their humility, their past, you know, track record, and the way they deal with people, their expertise, so many things are there. You know, it's a mixture of so many things, their empowerment. And we see that these people are really empowered enough to be able to really follow the strategy that we discussed about, which is to attract people to them and then give them to Krishna. So when we are interacting with these devotees who are able to have that kind of single-pointed vision to get the conditioned souls through this strategy, we may not always be able to understand their preaching strategy. In fact, we might be very bewildered because it is not something that is usually done. Why is this person just doing this? Is he trying to cut off connection with Prabhupada? Is he trying to cut off the connection with ISKCON? But this is not done the usual way. But Prabhupada himself, in the fourth chapter of the first canto, in one of the purports, he mentions that devotional service is dynamic and expert devotees always find competent means to inject this into the mass of people. So when we see that somebody is going out of their way to attract people to their personality, we can understand that this is, even though this has never been tried out before, this is one of the ways, one of, you know, an accepted strategy which we have seen that Prabhupada adopted in the early days of ISKCON, and how other devotees like Jayanand Prabhu, everybody adopted it without unconsciously perhaps. This is a time-tested way of how we can get people who are don't have so much faith in the institution, do not have so much faith in any kind of spiritual institution, to come and surrender to the lotus feet of Prabhupada and the previous acharyas and the Lord. So we should not get bewildered, but always keep this in mind that these people know what they are talking about. And when we identify such a genuine person who is able to do this with expertise, see, one thing is, we are not that empowered person, therefore we should never try to imitate the strategy. It's very dangerous for our spiritual life and also extremely dangerous for those whom we are attracting. That we have to be very clear. But if we see some empowered person is using this kind of strategy, all we can do is we can humbly offer our unconditional assistance to this person to increase the attraction of the mass of people to that personality. And in turn, not only the attraction of the people to that personality and Prabhupada increases, by offering our unconditional assistance in such a preaching strategy, we will find that our own attraction for that empowered personality increases, and our attraction for Prabhupada and Lord Sri Krishna also increases. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.